Hey there, veterans. This is Justin from Beyond the Uniform at beyondtheuniform.io. My goal is to give military veterans the tools they need to succeed in their civilian career. This is an in-betweenisode that I'm going to call Career Off-Roading. Normally, I publish shows on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I usually meet with a veteran to learn about their civilian career and what advice they'd have for fellow veterans. This week, though, I wanted to break from that routine to bring you something special and unique. This week, I meet with not one, but two veterans who work directly with helping veterans in their career transition. And I have to tell you, this interview is worth listening to not once, but maybe even twice. The show notes that are available at beyondtheuniform.io are absolutely exploding with links to resources and helpful tools for your transition. So in this episode of Career Off-Roading, we're going to go through a plethora of tips and tools for taking proactive role in your career transition and exploration. That includes things like coding academies and using them as an alternative to traditional and potentially outdated academic institutions, a look inside Facebook at what they value when looking for veterans, and free resources that you can use today to help in your exploration of your future career in micro steps rather than in 2 or 3 year commitments. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Maggie and Johannes. All right. Well, we have a slightly different show today. Normally, I meet with veterans to hear about their post-military career and advice for other veterans, and we may get into that a bit today. But the reason I was so excited to connect with Johannes and Maggie is based on their experience in connecting with veterans and working with veterans around their career transition. And to give context for our listeners, I'd love to ask maybe Maggie first and then Johannes. Would love to have you share a little bit more about your background in the military and what you've been up to since then.
My name's Maggie. I served 4 years in the Air Force. I was enlisted. My AFSC was 2E052. I was a ground radar systems journeyman. I did my technical training at Keesler Air Force Base in Mississippi. If anybody knows what AWACS is, I was basically a ground-mounted AWACS, which is a long-range search radar system. I went to tech school for 8 months and then was at my duty station at Langley for 9 months and deployed to Kuwait to establish a radar site to monitor the no-fly zone over Iraq. My military service was the best of times and the worst of times. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, but 4 years was plenty for me. So I got out, I went home, and I finished up my bachelor's degree. I actually went on to law school. I practiced law full-time for 7 years. I have a habit of making sharp right turns in my career path. I'm sort of a professional career transitioner. So after practicing law, I actually worked in politics, and then I was a union electrician. So I think I have undergone every training model known to humankind as far as apprenticeships, community college, graduate school, and everything else. I've spent the last year in Tacoma, Washington, studying the military transition program and working on establishing a code school and making sure that it is GI Bill eligible. I'm in Seattle right now at Code Fellows. Code Fellows is the only code school in the state of Washington that accepts the GI Bill. And I think of code schools as a 21st century education. It's not something that a lot of transitioning soldiers know about. And I think it's more like our military training. It gets us, it's an immersive training with a unit, and it gets us skilled up so we can start entry-level jobs in the technology industry.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, a lot we're going to be able to dive into on that. I appreciate that. And Johannes, how about you?
Yeah, well, thanks for having us. And I guess to start off with, I grew up here in Washington State, and I ended up enlisting in the Navy back in 2001, and I was a nuclear machinist mate, so I went through boot camp, then down to Charleston, South Carolina for nuclear power school. And halfway through, realized that that was not the career for me. And I applied and was accepted to the Naval Academy, class of 07, and did that. Graduated in 07 with a degree in English and a concentration in chemistry. And then went to San Diego, where I spent 5 years as a service warfare officer stationed aboard a frigate, the USS Thatch, and then a littoral combat ship, the LCS-1, USS Freedom. And I had a lot of experiences. I was kind of first lieutenant, assistant operations officer, MPA, three different deployments, one of them which we circumnavigated the globe. So we had quite a lot of great experiences. But at the end of my 5 years, I've kind of realized that I had done the department head role as a DIVO, thanks to a lot of turnover, and I really didn't want to do it again. I was kind of looking for something more challenging. So I decided to transition out, and in 2012, at the end of my 5 years, went to the reserves. And initially, I wasn't interested, but I was called by a reserve admiral with a bunch of other lieutenants that were getting out and kind of being begged to stay in the reserves. And I did, due to the safety net, the medical benefits, the income retirement, kind of a comfortable thing to hang back on. And actually, it has worked out really well. It's been a fantastic experience, and I would recommend it to anyone, just due to the people I've gotten to work with and the commands I've been in. And even now, I'm working with the commanding officers of two carriers here in Bremerton on the Navy Athena project and the DoD innovation. So there's been some really neat sort of opportunities there. And then I transitioned out in the last kind of between 2012 and 2015. I've done a lot of different stuff, trying to figure out, learn more about the transition process, what I want to do in life. And I've done everything from intern with my local congressman, both in D.C. and here locally, help draft legislation, overhaul VA management, join the local VA council, Washington State Military Transition Council, as a governor-appointed council, and have really gotten involved in researching sort of the impact of automation and tech on the future of labor. Also as an entrepreneur here in Washington, working with Bunker Labs Network and University of Washington Veteran Incubator for Better Entrepreneurship. And today I finally settled down and I've been doing consulting. I'm an independent consultant helping companies like Facebook and T-Mobile hire veterans. So I have a pretty good insight into the challenges facing corporations today for people trying the transition. So that's kind of my background in a nutshell.
Awesome. Well, maybe to start off, for both of you, I'd love to ask about either from your own experience or in just all the veterans you've seen in your time since you got out, what are some things that people on active duty may not yet understand about life on the outside or their civilian career?
I think the transition process doesn't really prepare you either career-wise or lifestyle-wise for what you see once you drive off base and take off the uniform. From the career standpoint, I think the model that's currently used, the 5 days mandatory training, is sort of death by PowerPoint, and it's still an older, I don't know, 1950s or 1960s model with pushing people towards higher education or vocational schools like truck driving. I've seen very few modern technology-based training opportunities that are well-publicized on base and preparations that would better enable people to have a skill set, especially that they could pick up during their last year of service. Especially on the technology side, there are a lot of online courses or self-study or there's a great national group that I'm working with called Operation Code. And at operationcode.org, you can go and sign up. There's about 720 of us across the nation, and they mentor people to learn some of the new technology skills. And I think having that under your belt as far as a skill set is going to make the transition to work a lot easier. And I think once you're settled with a job in your working life, the rest of it is a lot easier. And also finding a way to sort of keep a hold of that military identity. When I first got out, I actually didn't want anything to do with the military. I just wanted to be clear. But having now, it's for at least the past year, more than 50% of my contacts are either transitioning military families or veterans. And I have sorely missed that camaraderie that when I meet someone else and I know that they've served, it's just automatically we're cool. And there's a bond there. And so finding your tribe on the outside that has also taken out the uniform can be a huge help in transition. Because if I meet someone who essentially should be a stranger on Operation Code Slack channel, there's an immediate bond there and I can help them out with that transition in a way that civilians don't necessarily understand, especially for people in the Pacific Northwest, at least in Oregon, which is where I transitioned out to. There's no really active duty military population, and so it was a big gap. So knowing what that local population is like and where you're at is a big factor. Keeping a piece of that military identity, at least for me, and then having a skill set that you can rely on to transition back into the workforce.
Yeah, I love that. I love that sense, like you said, your tribe. And I think I definitely under-anticipated the bonds in the military. And when you transition out and you don't have that, you know, close-knit group around you, it's a little bit jarring to lose those ties. And so I really like that thought that you said of establishing that tribe, and that could be with other military people, or it could be finding other communities, but finding those social connections to help in that very big life transition. And I really like, you know, what I'm taking away from what you said is, not a reliance on the military process of the transition. I agree, at least when I did it 7 years ago, or yeah, it's about 7 years ago, it was antiquated then. And I like the Operation Code resource that you mentioned, of finding ways to develop your own skill set, finding ways to start filling in those gaps, because the existing infrastructure might not meet all of your needs for that. Johannes, anything to add to that?
That's definitely about, it covers 90% of it. The networking piece is so important on the active duty side, to start while you're on the active duty side before you make that leap. People, service members, you know, it's need to take the time to kind of figure out what sectors you're interested in and find ways to kind of build a tribe around that. And, you know, whether it's Operation Code, if you want to go in tech and build those skill sets, or whether it's management consulting, or whether it's finance, or whether it's law, there is sort of that group that exists, the veteran group, that the tribe that exists out there in those fields. And it's a matter of kind of reaching out and finding those people. And even if you're not sure you want to do, you know, take a career in those fields, being able to reach out and ask them the questions that are going to help you decide your future. It's a really important aspect to transition.
That's great. And let me actually just dive in there for a second. So you talked about networking and establishing these ties, and it's something that I had never done while in the military. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on, you know, what is networking, and what does that look like actually? How does that translate for someone on active duty?
Sure. LinkedIn offers a free premium job searcher account, and I highly recommend you sign up for it. Anybody sign up for it right away. And what you can do is basically use LinkedIn to find those veterans in the communities or in the companies or the sectors that you're interested in working. And recruiters do this to find veterans. We're training Facebook recruiters to do this. And an important part, like Maggie said, is to keep part of your sort of military identity on your LinkedIn profile. And this is counter to the ACAP, the TGPS as it's known now, transition programs. They want you to civilianize your resume and completely civilianize your LinkedIn and everything else. But the problem is, if you don't know the language that you're going to, you end up in this gray area where you have neither military, no handle for the recruiters to reach back to on your military side, and you neither have the keywords and language that they understand in their industry. So you kind of sit, you end up in this gray area where nobody recognizes you. So I think it's very important, just as a practical thing, to keep your career or references to sort of your military active duty experience. So whether that's your MOS or your rate or your NOBC, somewhere, not in your title, not, you know, up at the very top, but somewhere in your profile where it's searchable. But as you're going through and kind of understanding what career, so if you're interested in tech, for example, or in entrepreneurship, what you can do is go into LinkedIn, and then you go to the advanced search options, and you can actually select by current company. And you can look at people at Facebook, for example, and select previous employment, U.S. Navy, find the service that you came from, and then you can do a search based on the keywords, whether you're interested in networking or business operations or whatever field. Put in the keyword, find the past company, U.S. Navy, put in the present company, Facebook, and you come up with a whole list of specific people that are within the veteran community at Facebook. And more often than not, each of those companies will have a veteran employee resource group. And they're very, very interested often and forward-leaning in responding to you and trying to kind of help recruit veterans into their organization. So Kimberly Clark has similar things, GE, T-Mobile. So it's about taking those steps and kind of finding those people on LinkedIn and reaching out.
That's great. One thing I'd add to that is, a lot of times, so LinkedIn allows you to email someone through something called InMail, which, you know, from my experience, it's kind of hit and miss on whether someone responds to that. In doing that outreach, one tool that I found really, really helpful for those of you who use Gmail, there's a Gmail plugin called Reportive. And I'll put the link to that in the show notes. But what that does is, as you guess at their email address, which is usually like firstname.lastname@the company email address, you know, there's a couple different variations on that. Reportive ties into LinkedIn. So if you guess correctly, it'll bring up their profile information on the right. It's not what the plugin is intended for, but it's a nice little hack for it. And that will allow you to figure out when the email address is right. And a lot of this networking or cold outreach does just boil down to reaching out to people, having the courage to put yourself out there. And that's usually a numbers game of emailing 10 people to get 3 to 5 responses, even if it is veterans. So wanted to pass that along in case that's helpful as you're using LinkedIn to reach out to people with similar backgrounds or people who might be able to help you learn about an industry.
And excellent. I wasn't aware of that either. And I know another one that I've found very useful is using Twitter. Most people are on Twitter nowadays, and you can, if you're following them, you can direct message them, they're following you, or you can just post directly to the wall and just give a short little intro to yourself and ask to connect. And I found that to be very effective as well.
One thing I wanted to ask about, just jumping ahead a little bit, is around education. And Maggie, when we were trading emails, I really like that you, I think you have a perspective that's not as common right now, but I think definitely will be more common. And that's a degree of skepticism around the traditional approach to education. And one of the things I admire in your background is your ability to constantly be learning and taking a much more proactive role in your education than just signing up for a school and going and sitting in the class and not getting that much value out of it. And you had talked already about Operation Code, but I'm wondering what resources would you recommend to people who want to take that proactive approach to learning some new skill set or something new?
If there is a subject area that they are interested in, they can just Google it, and there's an online course. There's edX, there's Coursera. Operation Code has a list of resources available. Salesforce has a great online training program for people in the military community, including military spouses. I'm much more of an in-person kind of person. I actually don't do LinkedIn. I don't do Facebook. I don't do any of that. I just like to show up at events, and I took a lot of continuing ed classes through community college, and that's, you're not enrolled as a full-time student, but there are workshops, there are maker spaces where people are doing cool builds and technology and gadgets. I took a class on how to do a tune-up on my car. I just like to show up in a room with a bunch of people that know stuff that I don't know and get my hands on a project. I've taken woodworking classes. I actually dropped out of high school. So, but as an adult, I don't think I've gone more than 3 months without learning something, whether that's online or in person. I'm much more of an in-person person. I'm not going to work a room and talk to 20 people, but I will develop a really deep bond with one or two people over a hands-on project. And there are so many resources out there. The pitfall that I see is people spend too much time researching and looking for the perfect online class or the perfect training course. And all you really need is the, not even the 70%, but the 50% solution. You just need something that gets you started and that works for you, whether that's an online class or in person. But don't spend too much time looking at some point, just even if you're throwing a dart against the wall, pick something and do it. And if it doesn't work out, that's a lesson learned and pick something else.
Spoken like a true entrepreneur. I love it. I love that thought of, because I agree. I think so often searching for the perfect or optimal solution to anything really stands as an impediment to forward motion that ultimately helps the person. And I like that thought of not wasting too much time, but taking more of this trial and error and omnivore's approach, and not being afraid to try, and not being afraid to quit something if it's not right, not being afraid to disengage if it's not meeting your needs. But I think that's I'm obviously biased as a fellow entrepreneur on that, but I think that's a great piece of advice for people. And you had mentioned events. And I'm sure that a lot of these were really specific to whatever you were interested in at the time. But do any events or types of events or places to find events stand out as a resource that you'd want to recommend?
So in Seattle, there have been a lot of startup weekends, and there's something called, I think it's called the Seattle Tech Listserv. They post events almost every day. Actually, there's about 200 unread emails in my folder that I have for them. And Meetup, I think, meetup.com is a great resource. But if you just Google in your area, but also ask your local contacts. Sometimes I think we think that networking is going out and talking to people that we don't know. But networking can also be asking people that we do know and telling them what we're interested in. I actually had a conversation with an Army guy this morning, and one of his buddies that he went to high school with in Italy is the perfect person that I want to sit down and talk to for a certain subject. And I was just talking about what I was curious about, and he just happened to have somebody in his mental Rolodex that fit the bill. And so whether you're talking to your cousin or somebody at the grocery store or wherever else, just talk about what you're curious about and approach it not as networking and you have to make an impression and everything else, but that you just want to show up and ask questions and learn something. And I think that's a much more, that can be an easier entry point for what people call networking, instead of calling it networking and making it seem like such a...
I like that too. I mean, I have an aversion to the word networking, but I like what you're describing, which feels much more authentic to me, which is just being curious with other people and being open about whatever's interesting to you at the moment. And I think that that leads to genuine conversations, that leads to people helping each other out. And it's not networking. It's not like you're going about it with a specific agenda or with some sort of, Dan Carnegie or whatever that book is, guiding your interactions. It's just being a human being and actually showing interest in others and being open about your own experience.
And also always be willing to return the favor. So anybody that contacts me, I've been slipping lately, but I try to get back to them within 24 hours and I offer them whatever resources I know about. And that person that you help today may be the person that helps you next week.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's great advice. Before I move on, Johannes, just wanted to give you a spot as well. If you have anything you'd want to add about resources or thoughts on education or anything in that vein.
I think education is definitely, these MOOCs are a very powerful new tool. And Coursera offers free military courses. There's also Udemy and Udacity, as well as Khan Academy. And like Khan Academy and Coursera, those are free options to go out and kind of take very quick snapshots of industries or sectors that you may have interest in. And so this kind of helps if you don't know what on earth you're interested in and what you want to do, if everything looks kind of interesting, because there are a lot of career paths in today's world. And so being able to kind of get a quick snapshot through a six-week class or a three-week class is something you can easily do online. It's on active duty. It's self-paced. You can pick and choose. And so I would definitely recommend those sorts of options. And if you're interested in it, then you could do something like Udacity with more of a paid course with maybe more of a degree or certificate program at the end. And edX and Coursera, these are actually classes from Stanford, from Harvard, from Wharton. So they're very high quality content, and I definitely recommend those. And I think that Meetup is definitely the best place to kind of start to find and build those networks locally in your space. So there's meetups and everything, whether it's Lean Startup in Seattle or it's finance or veterans on Wall Street or vets in tech. There's all kinds of resources out there to connect with.
Awesome. I'm just taking notes. And as a reminder, listeners, all of these things they're mentioning, I'll add links in the show notes. So if you're driving, don't get in a car accident trying to write down this. But there's a tremendous amount of great resources there they're mentioning here. And so I'll be sure to update that. You know, another thing I was curious about is just common mistakes that you see veterans making in their transition to civilian life. And again, this could be from your own experience. It could be from friends or people you've worked with or veterans you've helped along the way. But curious what some of those mistakes are that you've seen people make.
Some of the mistakes, I think, one of the biggest ones I think I've seen in just working with companies is veterans that do follow the advice of the TGPS or ACAP, and they do completely civilianize their resumes without knowing what they're interested in. I think that it's very challenging to get a job unless you go through a recruiter like Lucas Group, who kind of has already pre-built some of those relationships for you and their network. You're kind of leveraging their networks to get your interview. But it may not be in an industry or sector that you're interested in. So I think before you do that, it's important to kind of know where you're going and then use those key terms to build your network, identify the key terms of that specific industry, and then build your resume to that position. And I think that leads into kind of the second part. I see a lot of service members and veterans go to job fairs, the military job fairs or the SACC, the Academy Conference fairs, and they go in with this expectation that I'm military and I can do anything. And what I see is they go in and they say, walk up to the recruiter and say, I'm here, I can do anything. And the recruiter looks at them blankly and says, with a blank stare, and kind of says, what are you talking about? I can't do anything with that. Because recruiters are there looking for specific people to fill a specific position in the company. And most recruiters are familiar with the process where someone who's interested in the job comes to them with their resume, purpose-built to that specific position, and with the right key terms, with the right stories, with the right background. And it's very difficult to kind of bridge that divide if you're just kind of showing up at the desk saying, hire me, I can do anything. So those are two big mistakes that I think I see people make a lot of the time. And I definitely recommend the networking part, the education part, and custom building, purpose building your resume two specific positions within companies before you're ready to go to that job fair or you're ready to go and send your application.
That's great. I love the thought of doing the work for the listener. And so taking your background in it and doing the heavy lifting of explaining to them why that's valuable or how it would fit in with their organization, rather than putting all the work on them, like you said, of just showing up and saying, I can do anything, which doesn't really give them a lot of room to play with that.
Right. Exactly.
Before I move on, Maggie, anything to add to that?
I would totally agree with that. I heard it described as an Amazon recruiter that military people tend to describe themselves as a Swiss Army knife, that they can do anything. And what I've seen is that companies want to know that you want to work for them specifically and what your skill set is, not that you just want to work for any company. It's sort of a bigger picture. I think a lot of people, when you get out and you're no longer with your unit and you're not wearing the uniform, you think that I think we tend to be self-reliant, but you don't have to do this by yourself. And there's more than 20 million veterans in the country, and you still have a tribe and you can ask for help. And any veteran that calls me or emails me or texts me, I will help them no matter what, because they're in the family. And there are ways to navigate it and resources out there that maybe aren't most of the official sources of help aren't the best in my experience, but there are those of us out there that will help you make that transition and you don't have to do it by yourself.
Yeah, never the need to reinvent the wheel. It's so much more efficient to find other people who have done it and learn from them and more importantly, learn from their mistakes, because you know, anything new thing you learn, you make a ton of mistakes, get a lot of scars there. And so borrow that experience and that pain from someone else. And Maggie, you had talked a little bit about code schools, and for someone on active duty who may not be familiar with what a code school is, could you talk a little bit more about what code schools are, and then maybe help them navigate that landscape of how to find the right program for them?
So a code school, I think of a code school like our military training. It's short-term and intensive, and it's designed to get you working at a job. So there's a ton of code schools nowadays. They started in the nation about 2011. There are about 250 nationwide right now, and they tend to focus on a specific programming language. So they can be front-end or back-end, they can be web development, they can be Python, but usually they'll teach you sort of an introduction to software development. CodeFellows is the program I'm most familiar with. So CodeFellows teaches you a 201, which is an introduction to software development. Then the 301 is an intermediate class, and the 401 is sort of their graduate school. So you can either choose JavaScript, Python, or iOS, and it's a 10-week development accelerator. So it's really meant to be almost like a special forces technical training that is difficult, but it's meant to get you skilled up working on a real-life project to get you working. And I think code schools make more sense for us than a 2 or 4 year degree, which a 2 or 4 year degree, you have to take a lot of things like English composition and public speaking, and it's not really about getting you into the working world. And even people that I've talked to who have graduated from a 4 year school with a computer science degree, it's most theory based. It's not relationships with technical companies or startup companies that are going to get you working. So there are code schools in probably just about every state. There are only, I think at last count, 7 code schools in the nation that take the GI Bill. If people go to Operation Code, there's actually a list of code schools that take the GI Bill. Operation Code also has partnerships with other code schools that offer a scholarship. I believe it's Full Stack is offering 10 scholarships to Operation Code members right now. That application process is open. But I think it makes more sense for people that are transitioning out, because I always say that when you get out, you take one step down. And at one step down, we can catch you. We can set you up with a job and a training and get you solid again. But that loss of identity and everything else, it's one step down. And I think when the services don't catch you, that's when you start getting into more problematic areas, where a lot of the veteran service organizations focus on what I call emergency room services instead of preventative healthcare. And besides the code schools for when you get out, if you know that that's something you want to do, you can sample it through online courses or CodeFellows, and a lot of other code schools will do like a one-day course. So you can at least go there, get your hands on a keyboard, and see if coding or technology is the right fit for you.
Man, I love everything you're saying. I think that there's so much wisdom packed into what you're saying. And I love that thought of the trial process and kind of dipping your toes in through free resources to figure out if this is something you like. And I like that escalation. You can go from there to a day long, and then you can sign up for a 10-week course, and just continuing this thread of just experimentation and be willing to fail and figure out if something's not right. And like I always feel like in this job search, closing a door is just as valuable as finding the right career. So maybe you do a day-long code intensive and figure out it's not for you, and that's really valuable piece of information for you. One thing that I would add about the coding academies is that most of the ones that I've seen or talked to, they're very transparent in their job rates. So what percentage of their graduates go on to take full-time employment, if that's their goal in a programming capacity. That's definitely information you can dive into. And another free resource is Glassdoor.com. Glassdoor, it's self-reported information, but it's trying to bring transparency to what different jobs pay. And so one thing, it seems like a lot of veterans sometimes have they may expect too much pay too early in their career. And so Glassdoor is a free resource where you could say, look, this coding academy says they're going to get me a job as a software developer at company X. You might be able to find on Glassdoor what that salary is, so you can start to weigh the pros and cons of paying for the education and what you'll expect to get out of it. So I'd throw those both out as resources too. And Johannes, I was going to ask you about, you had mentioned in your intro about your work with companies like Facebook and T-Mobile. In working with them and helping educate them about hiring veterans, what would you want veterans to know at applying to institutions like that?
Definitely. What we do is we work with the recruiters and the diversity staff to create a veteran hiring playbook. So just kind of to see what some companies are doing on the inside, they're actually... we're building them a playbook that they can reference within their, they hang on their wiki within their company. And they then offer this playbook that explains everything from military culture, kind of how to break down your resume and different sort of military acronyms that you might commonly be using. We also really dive into the soft skills that are really valuable to these organizations. For example, Facebook values. They really value entrepreneurial skills. Their mission statement or their core values are focus on impact, move fast, be bold, be open, and build social value. And to me, that has a lot of sort of convergence with the military values. And even the SHRM, the Society for Human Resources Management, they have done studies showing that these soft skills that military bring, these strong leadership qualities, personal integrity, the ability to set and achieve goals, teamwork, learning new skills, perseverance, all those are extremely valuable in the private sector. So we work to make a strong correlation between those Facebook values or the T-Mobile values or whatever the corporate values are with what we're doing in the military. And a lot of the time, people just kind of have that light bulb come on. The recruiter's like, oh, wow. Because in the past, it's more of most recruiters are not military, have never had that experience, and it's easier for them to simply look at the civilian resume whose private sector certifications, like CNNA, the routing and server networking sort of certifications they can recognize right off the bat versus the military skills. So seeing it on that end, we're doing the training on that end so that they can go and look at the resume and look for those keywords. And so they'll be looking for things like, were you ranked one out of your, you know, on the top half of your peers? What sort of awards did you have? And we're training them to look at sort of to deeper in the, look deeper in the profile, look deeper in the resume. So be sure to kind of put that information concisely within the resume. And I was one out of five for this period. I had this sort of impact statement. And they're sort of always saying a story, short, kind of blurred within your resume, but with impact, defining what was your impact to the organization. And one big problem we often see is that veterans like to use the word we, and it's very difficult to kind of take personal credit. But even now, as people are active duty or recently have become a veteran, it's important to kind of break down those stories into how you yourself impacted that organization and what was sort of changed because of that action. And so that's sort of the stuff that helps them go through your resume and, you know, see some of those soft skills that they're looking for and be able to translate that to actionable items that they can justify to their hiring manager and justify that hire. And get that sort of get your resume in front of them and get you hired into the company. So those are some of the big things.
I love that. I mean, two things that jump out at me. First, that whole concept of I versus we. I just remember in business school when we were talking to classmates and looking at other people's resumes, I would just get so angry when I would see someone talking about how I launched this satellite. And I was like, no, you were part of a 500-person team that launched a satellite. Or I brought this to market. It's like, no, you were part of a massive team that did that. And that is a carryover from the military, is always attributing things, to, or at least for me, always attributing things to the group instead of, being honest that you played a role in that. And that's kind of the game is different on the outside in taking individual responsibility for what you did and contributed to. And the other thing I loved about what you said is that numbers are the universal language, and someone might not understand your military experience, but everyone understands a 200% improvement or an 80% reduction in costs or errors or being number one of seven peers. These numbers are the things that stand out that show excellence in your past, which is a good predictor of, future excellence. So I think that was really helpful.
And they also, that establishing sort of that trend of excellence over a long period of time and breaking it out helps them to, again, justify that hire. And also do realize that a lot of people lie on resumes. So I think a lot of recruiters come at military resumes with and apply the same sort of concern that they have for the sort of private sector or for, sort of civilians that are sending in their resumes. And they're just lumping everybody together and assuming that everybody's lying on their resume. So another kind of critical aspect of what we teach is that for most of us, I think most of the people I've encountered in my service, it's hard to lie. And so we're kind of having to do a bit of retraining with the recruiters as well. But by breaking it down to your individual contribution and backing that up with numbers, it will help them to realize that, oh yeah, you're not making this up. Because that is sometimes the default assumption they come at resumes with.
And I would say also, like, not even from a lying standpoint, but I know that my approach, and I think most veterans' approach, is I always erred on the conservative side. And if I didn't know whether this was a 70% increase or 50% increase, I was going to go with 50 because I did not want to misrepresent that. And I don't think that that's necessarily wrong, but I just want anyone listening to make sure that they err, always being truthful, but err on the side that's fair to you as well. And this is not the same situation you're coming from where if it's 70% versus 67%, it could get someone killed. Like, the consequences are not that dire. So don't unnecessarily weight things towards that safety margin that works against you. Always being honest, but also be fair to yourself. And I think that was, for me, and I imagine for most veterans, something you have to learn is that you do kind of learn to put the unit first at your own expense. And that probably won't get you as far personally or professionally on the outside. It might not be the most helpful strategy for you.
Couldn't agree more.
I'd kind of like to jump in on that a little bit, because I actually think that's the piece of our culture that we need to take with us when we get out of the military, and we need to embed that in the civilian culture. I spent 10 years around the civilian world, and I never felt like I fit or had that unit cohesion. Or you can look at our national political conversation that's ongoing right now, and I think if you took the best parts of the military culture, that sense of trust and unit and putting someone else before yourself, and if we took that like a virus and infected the civilian world, we would have a better nation.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And I think, I think one of the things that comes up for me around this in the transition is you are in many ways establishing your identity as a civilian. And I love that thought of being deliberate in the positive elements that you want to maintain as part of your identity. And I think that one thing that people really value about veterans is that integrity and is that trustworthiness. And I've had investors comment on that with me, and I've seen that in so many cases where that integrity is such a vital attribute, and to not make short-term decisions that would compromise that. So I'm torn here because I have other questions to ask, and I'm realizing that I'm just scratching the surface of what you both have experienced. And so I'm tempted, I'd kind of like to just turn things over to each of you to talk about anything that I haven't asked about that you think is really important and relevant. And knowing that you have an audience of veterans and active duty personnel, what have we not touched on that you want them to know or you want to share with them?
Sure. I can go first. I I think some of the important stuff is to kind of leverage the organizations that are out there in the research process. If you don't know what you want to do, there's the American Corporate Partners, the ACP, and they provide a senior level civilian or somebody in the private sector in a senior leadership position to be a mentor. There's programs like the Deloitte Core Leadership Program, which helps you build an elevator pitch and kind of build your brand. There's organizations like Vet Tech Trek that kind of help you go from tech companies around Silicon Valley or New York. I think they do finance as well. And they help you bypass the screening process and get straight to the interview. There's the Commit Foundation. There's a lot of resources, a lot of good organizations out there that have relationships built, networks built that can help you not only determine what your interests are, but and counsel you, but also then get you the right introductions to make that transition very smoothly. So I think that during the active duty time, it's really important to, while you're still active duty, it's very important to kind of find those organizations and leverage them. And if you're looking for specific skills, there's Upwork is one of the world's largest freelance websites. And that you can just Google their blog, Upwork Top Skills for 2016. And what they'll do is tally all of the freelancers that are working on their website and tell you which of the skill sets are most valuable that year. So they'll tell you whether it's PHP or whether it's, which is some sort of coding language, or whether it's freelance in the freelancing world, what skills are most valuable and most in demand that year. So that's a valuable tool to kind of look at what jobs are available, what's a hot career in the future. I would say be very cautious with the Department of Labor websites, the ONET and the Career One Stop. They are very outdated and they are woefully under-resourced. So, for example, if you put in Service Warfare Officer 1110, which 25% of officers in the Navy are, you'll end up with coat room attendant or colonoscopy technician, which neither of which were very interesting for my future. And I know it's something that's TAPS and ACAP and TGPS, they promote very heavily. So I would rely less on those and more on, you know, whether it's LinkedIn or whether it's these organizations that are out there that can help you kind of get the ground truth. And I think if you're interested in innovation, if there's active duty members out there interested in innovation, there's a lot on the active duty side you can do now to plug into that'll help you kind of build those networks for the outside. For example, there's a whole new organization called the DIUX, the Defense Innovation Unit Experimental in Silicon Valley. There's a Navy version of it called the Navy Innovation Advisory Council. There's a Navy organization called Navy Athena Project, which is TED Talks meets Shark Tank. You bring your pitch as an active duty member. You organize it. People organize it out in the community. And you come in civvies and pitch your idea, and then you can get networked into senior military leadership to kind of help advance your project into the right innovation cells. There's Hack for Defense, which is a project that is leveraging Stanford students to solve and tackle really big military problems. There's a Defense Entrepreneurship Forum, DEF, in October of every year. And then DEF-X is around the country where they bring together innovators from all around the country. So if you're finding, you know, you're not interested in what you don't know what you want, or you're interested in innovation, you're interested in more challenge, these are organizations that I wish I had known about when I was active duty that can plug you into some really significant networks on the outside. For example, with DEF, they have ties to Silicon Valley and to Steve Blank and Lean Startup Movement, which is really, really important if you're an entrepreneur, and Stanford as well. So I definitely, there's a lot of excellent resource out there, and feel free to reach out, whether to myself or Justin, I'll throw you out there, and Maggie, because these tools are out there, and I think it's 21st century transition is not as big a challenge. It's more of just breaking down the barriers and finding the right resources to get you connected.
Awesome. Maggie, how about you?
I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit philosophical in this moment, and I sort of I think, especially for women veterans, identifying as a veteran, I saw a number recently that 60 to 70% of women veterans in the state of Washington don't self-identify. And I'm not, I don't know if I'm advocating a position, but tossing out the question that the transition can be a personal thing. And it took a while for me to sort of fully come back and embrace my tribe. But at a bigger philosophical picture, I wish that the veteran population was more visible and more that we wore it on our sleeves more and we wore those best qualities on our sleeves more and contributed that more to the larger society. And so I think there's in the transition that the process is checking into all the resources and getting yourself squared away where you're going to live and where you're going to work and your family and everything else. But there's also sort of this deeper thought about what your military service meant and what it means on the outside and what you carry with you. And that's something I've been thinking about a lot, especially over the past year, as I've been talking to a lot of transitioning soldiers. I've had a couple close friends who have transitioned out, and it doesn't happen. For both of them, it took several months, for one, even 8 months to a year, where you could just sort of see the layers dissolving away. And it's almost like everything goes into the crock pot and it just takes some time to simmer and cook. But I think once you've worn the uniform, you never, even when it is off, you never really take it off. It's always a part of you that's there and it's your identity. I can never not be a veteran. And I think just thinking about that at sort of a deeper philosophical level and knowing what that means for somebody personally is sort of a foundational level to the mechanics of where you're going to work and where you're going to live and how you talk about your military service.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on that. I think for me as well, when I transitioned out of the military, I maybe not intentionally, but definitely distanced myself from that and just really wanted to swing to the other perspective of just being free and not being encumbered by that. And it's only been in the last couple of years where I feel like, you know, especially through this project of re-engaging with this this community, and like Maggie said, like realizing what an important part that is to who I am. And I love that concept of how each of us have so many different parts and components, and there's, you know, so many different pieces to each of us, and to deny or suppress or hide any one of those pieces holds us back from being who we really are and to reaching that full potential of who we are as people. And so I like that component too of really embracing all the different groups that you belong to and all the different parts of your identity. I think that's a very, very powerful strategy. Well, appreciate both of your time. I just want to make one last piece of room. If there's anything else you guys wanted to add, I don't want to suck up too much of your time, but I realize we've got two or three more minutes, and I've been loving everything you both have shared so far. So any final rounds?
Anybody that's interested in the technology side, do check out operationcode.org. I'm on their Slack channel, at Maggie, M-A-G-G-I. People can feel free to contact me through a direct message on there, or free to share my contact information with your listeners.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think you're going to post some of the links, but if you're interested in entrepreneurship or innovation, Bunker Labs has an excellent free resource, Bunker Labs in a Box, which gives you kind of an overview of what entrepreneurship looks like. I know it's been a pretty hot topic. And as well as the Defense Entrepreneurship Forum or the Athena Project, all of which are excellent networks to plug into and will probably be valuable.
Awesome. Well, thank you both.
Surface, surface, surface.
All right, gang, that's all for today. A couple quick admin items at beyondtheuniform.io. You will find more resources like data, charts, graphs, and a ton of interviews in the podcast section. If you have feedback, if you have ideas on how to make the show better and how to provide more resources to veterans, please drop me a line at beyondtheuniform.io/ping. Lastly, not endorsed by service to school at all, but it's an organization I've really come to respect based on these interviews. If you are on active duty, or if you're a veteran in general and thinking about going to school, that's grad school, undergrad, med school, law school, any type of academic institution, I definitely recommend you check out Service to School. They provide free resources to veterans. They pair you with someone with a similar background who can guide you through the process of everything you need to know to get into the school that's best for you. That's interview prep, resume help, all sorts of things. So check them out at servicetoschool.org. Have a great rest of the week and looking forward to talking to you soon.